don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Hello, everyone, and welcome right here to the Streets on Love You Back radio show. And we live here tonight with Wesley Snipes Movement, Three Wesley Snipes. And we're going to hear from his team. And right now, I'm going to pass the mic over to everyone to speak on his behalf. So you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, welcome to the Streets of Love Back radio show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and so now you can formally introduce each one of yourselves, and we can get it started.
Okay, my name is Kim.
Go ahead, ladies first.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Dorothy Gaines. I'm from Mobile, Alabama. I was doing 20 years in federal prison. I was released in 2000 by former President Bill Clinton.
All right, that sounds like a winner. Now, gentlemen, second.
Okay, my name is Kemp W. Ford, Jr. I represent the Free Wesley Snipes Movement along with Ms. Dorothy Gaines. I was convicted under the Espionage Act of 1917, and I served 6 years.
Okay, all right. So with that being said, we'll come over to the young lady, and we want to just ask you to tell the viewers how you came up and how your life took a turn to get into the system for 20 years and where you at now, and we will put questions in there as we go on.
In 1993, I was a nurse at Providence Hospital in Mobile, and I was dating a man that I did not know was a drug dealer. And I feel he was a drug dealer. He was a drug user, a closet drug user. I saw no signs of him being a user until later on, after the indictment came down, and it was associated with some of his friends, and they used me as a scapegoat. Even the kingpin didn't get 20 years in federal prison because I had no knowledge. I had no crimes before. I was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison because I refused to be a government informant. After serving 6.5 years, sir. After serving 6.5 years, oh yeah, no, I couldn't lie on anyone to put them in a place that I didn't want to go. So after serving 6.5 years, and with the media like yours and all the media and the writing, Essence magazines and all the different organizations, Families Against Mandatory Minimum, November Coalition, Criminal Justice Policy Foundation, Sentencing Project, ACLU, and all these groups got together, and I just fought my way. I wrote myself out of prison, and it got to President Clinton's hands, and I was released 2 days before Christmas in 2000.
Amen. Praise God for that, sister, you know. And with that being said, how did you start educating yourself once you went on lockdown? Because, you know, when people go inside the prison walls, a lot of people don't start educating themselves. They think it's just about being buck wild and we're going to get in trouble and do all this right there. What motivated you as an individual to get educated while you were there that 6 years?
What motivated me was it was my children. I was the only living parent to my kids. And I had never clubbed, never drank. Only thing I ever done was with my kids. Anything that my kids couldn't be involved in, I had no part. So my heart was still lying out here with my children. And to this day, I never watched a soap opera, and I'm 53 years old. So I didn't go in prison playing cards. They used to tell my pastor, I didn't learn how to play cards on the outside, and I'm not in here to play cards. So I started reading every article I could read about drug conspiracy, everything I could hear about it, I would write to that person that wrote that story until someone finally wrote back and started with my case.
Amen. Amen for that, you know. And when your case became a media, in the media, what was your first reaction when you seen people reaching out to shed light on your situation?
It was not having knowledge of the situation. A lot of people don't understand conspiracy. A lot of people to this day think that everyone that's incarcerated had to sell, use, have some hands on with drugs. They don't know there's what they call ghost drugs. There's what they call dry conspiracy. Having knowledge of something and having just one person to say that you knew about this conspiracy and a person that's facing a life sentence, hey, they will turn their mother in to get themselves out of trouble. If they would go back and look
at the
movie called Built by Association that was put out in 2000 with Mercedes Ruel, also the copy called Snitch by PBS Frontline that was filmed in 1999, they would get a sense of how this conspiracy law works.
Right. And when the conspiracy law broke in, did they get you up under conspiracy law? Did they charge you with conspiracy?
I'm charged with one count of conspiracy and one count, I say, of ghost drugs with my own child father that had never given me one dime to take care of her, testified against me and his mother. His mother did time as well as myself.
Hold on. Back that all the way up. You mean to tell me your baby daddy, right?
My child's father was doing 15 years.
He testified on you, and he testified on his own mama?
Yes, he did.
Oh, Lord. Now, we definitely have to get into that for a minute. Now, for a man or woman to testify on their mother, and not alone their mother, but their child's mother, you know, that is, as far as I'm concerned, that is far below of being a rat. You know what I mean? That's
there
just downright, you don't give a damn, nobody.
I mean, there are many, though. There are many. If people would read the stories that's on November Coalition walls and Families Against Mandatory Minimum, their walls, and see, I mean, I was incarcerated with a mother, a granddaughter, and a daughter, three generations. And it was three sons that was placed in another prison, and their own child testified on them.
Wow.
The grandmother was 85 years old and died in prison, begging to go home and die. And their own child testified on them to keep from going to prison himself.
Right.
So it happens every day.
Right. So what made you get involved with giving back and helping others after you came out of prison?
There was a commitment that I made to God that if he would get me out of those 20 years that I was sentenced to falsely, that I would come out and to make people aware of how the system, how the government themselves really is, how they take the felon's word, put them on the stand. And what was so tragic in my trial is that when they asked one of the guys that was testifying in the trial, pick out the person in the courtroom that he had bought an ounce of crack cocaine from, you would never believe who he picked out in that courtroom.
You and his mother.
He picked out a juror. He picked out a juror.
Wow.
So we just knew then that the case was over because he looked over there and picked out a juror. So that showed that he was there to get his time because he was never... I mean, he knew nobody in the courtroom, so he looked over and picked out a juror. So then they went back and they come back and said that he couldn't see that at that time the person he was picking out at that time was a little heavier. There's reframing all over to get it, and I just can't believe to this day the jury bought that.
Right.
Because
right.
he looked all over the courtroom and looked in the jury box to pick the juror out.
That is wild, you know. So in the meantime, when the judge done sentenced you to 20 years, you looking down the stretch and can't even see that far when they said 20 years, you know.
You know, they don't even give you years when the government sentenced you. They give it to you in months. So when they sentenced me to 235
right.
months, I'm just crazy because I'm knowing 12 months is 1 year.
Right.
So 235 months is a long way from 12 months. So I just actually passed out.
Wow.
Yes.
And this happened in Alabama?
In Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah, that is a crucial thing right there, you know, for anybody, like I said, to get up on the witness stand and you put your own mama in jail, and not alone, you put your baby's mama in jail. That's below being a rat. That's just like I said, that's disgusting, you know? And now let's talk about how did you get involved with the Free the Wesley Snipes movement? You know, how did you get involved with that?
Well, Dr. Randy Short, when he was at Harvard, I think it was the college, he wrote an article. He wrote a story on me as a grandmother being incarcerated at that time. That's how I came in. Familiar with Dr. Short back in 1990, in those times when he was fighting himself to get people to help get me out of prison. He did a lot of fighting as well. So I've always kept in contact with Dr. Short. So then he brought me into this movement now.
Okay. That sounds like a winner right there, you know. So what we're going to do, we're going to hold pause for a minute, and we're going to go to the next gentleman. And we want to ask you to let the viewers know also how did you get incarcerated and how did that make you feel with your incarceration and did you get educated at the time of your incarceration?
Yes, I at the time of my incarceration I was I had two bachelor's and a master's degree. And what ended up happening to me, I was convicted under the Espionage Act of 1917, the same act as people as Thomas Drake was up for Bradley Manning, and it's a rarely prosecuted statute going back into history. A Randolph was charged with it's a World War One it was a statute that was passed during the World War One where people who were against the war they were brought down by this statute. So this is a rarely prosecuted statute. So What they ended up doing was I was prosecuted and convicted of this act in 2005. At the time, I was a government employee. I was working for the National Security Agency, and from there I went from there to Northrop Grumman, and I was at Northrop Grumman for a week when the FBI knocked on the door. And accused me of the Espionage Act of 1917, and come to find out, it was fabricated. These two FBI agents fabricated the affidavit. They had two different affidavits drawn out to search my home and my two vehicles within a 24-hour period. And what the government ended up doing, the judge, Peter Massetti, in Greenbelt, Maryland, was he suppressed both of those affidavits that were manufactured and made up to get me into court. So now I was sitting in court without even being able to defend myself against these lies within the affidavit. So the star witness was this female who I only knew for 8 weeks, told was testified against me saying that I was that I was in possession of classified documents, and I was looking at them, and that she saw secret secret classified papers within my home. But then when it was when she was asked what did what indicated that were classified, she said that it had the word classified. But and everybody in that deals with classified information is knows that there's no such thing as that. It's either ranked as confidential, secret, or top secret. And so the jury went on and pretended trial, and they went on and found me guilty anyway. And then also they also charged me, and I was found guilty on providing a false statement on a government form, in which after 10 months after my arrest, and I was let out on that, let alone let out on this Espionage Act on my own personal recognizance. I mean, that's ridiculous within itself. If the government really felt I was doing something, I would have been sitting up in there today. And so what ended up happening was they said I falsified some information on a government form, and the jury found me guilty of that. I told them the whole shebang for my arrest and what was happening, and still that wasn't enough. So, and a lot of things during my trial was left out, like evidence that was left out, where that would have worked for my favor, but the judge suppressed that also.
Right. So, with your case, how much time did they end up giving you behind that?
They had given me 6 years.
Okay, you did 6 years. You did federal time?
Yes, I did federal time, so 85% of that time and 3 years probation.
Okay. And now, when that case was going on, when you brought the evidence to them saying, this ain't me, I didn't do that, you know, how did that make you feel when the judge and everybody didn't even look at what was happening, you know?
Well, I felt like I was betrayed. I felt like the United States of America laws and the United States of America had betrayed me, and I felt like I just felt so low. Where even now I really don't trust American laws at all.
Period.
Because whenever the courts want them to work against you, they work against you, no matter how much evidence you have. Yes.
My man, you know. So my thing is that, you know, how did you get involved with Wesley Snipes movement as well? How did you get involved with that?
Well, I got involved with it the same way Dorsey Gaines had got involved. I met Dr. Randy Short, and then he introduced us to the founder of the Free Wesley Snipes movement of Roslyn Cross Ratliff. And it started out with they were a little more than a fan club. They were actually the movement actually looked at the injustices that happened in the Wesley Snipes conviction. And then also it round off into the prison industrial complex, and also mass incarceration, and pushes for judicial reform for these ridiculous laws that's being passed and being perpetrated, especially against people of color.
Amen for that, brother. You know, and one thing I would like to say is that I appreciate you and Ms. Gaines taking the time to come on the radio show and spread your message and let people know why you got involved with the ingest and the ingest that happened to you as well, you know. And like I said, I feel both of y'all's story, and Miss Gang's story is a powerful story, you know, that, you know, she ended up looking 20 years down the barrel. And, you know, the guy that should have been taking the 20 years, he up on the stand, turning the state's evidence on everybody and his mama, you know. So that's a blow-away situation when you can actually stand up on the stand and testify on the woman who had you. That's enough to blow anybody away.
That's true. You know, and what really my case was so powerful about, and I think that's why I got so much attention, is because the guy that I went down with, the government just knew, and that's what people think, that because we're black and we go downtown and we're going to testify, they just knew. My lawyer, he was a conspirator himself to the government, because the person that I went down with, which was my common law husband, he told them I had nothing to do with it, knew nothing about it, and he begged my attorney for weeks to come and talk to him. And my attorney begged me money that he was going to testify against me. He said, I'm not going to waste my time and go and talk to him when I know without a shadow of a doubt that he's going to testify against you. So when the government put them on his list to testify against me, he got on the stand and testified for me, and my lawyer said, I owe you something. This has never happened before. And
right.
He was the one that was telling them that the people that was testifying, because they had him in the cell with all the snitches, because they were so sure that he was going to snitch. So he was telling them, the judge, that everybody that got on the stand to testify would come back into the holding cell and tell the next person what to say.
Right.
And they called for a sidebar. They called for a sidebar, and the judge asked questions, and it still let the trial still go on. But what I have to say in good of my judge saw through this the whole while, and he wrote a letter also to the president and asked for my release.
My judge
that sentenced me to 20 years never gave up on me. He wrote a letter, and it bothered him the whole while that I was incarcerated to get me out of there.
Right. And in the meantime, you know, what kind of education, like we go back a little bit, what kind of education would you give these other young kids out here that's trying to mingle and dab in a lot of different things and letting them know how easy it is to get caught up and be facing a life sentence or a 20-year sentence, you know? Let them know about that, Ms. Gaines.
Well, you know, since I've been released, I have spoke around this country as a motivational speaker. And my target is young people and women, because they are so easily to get caught up in material things and fast money. You know, I take an example of one young girl that I was incarcerated with, and she was the youngest girl there. They had held her juvenile. Mm-hmm. It's where she went to school one day, and she skipped school. Her mother was thinking she was at school. She skipped school, and she went with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend carjacked the car, and because she was in that car with him, she received 10 years in federal prison. And that's what I mean, and I tell these young people that's in school, you have to watch, or you go to school, you're supposed to be in school. Young girls think because they ride around with these rims on the car, they ride around with men taking them to get their nails done and clothes, and I always tell them, let me tell you something.
Right.
When you go to prison, you're going to wear white out on your nails, and you're going to wear a uniform every day. And you got to dream about what you had on the outside. And that same man that you're involved with is going to be on the stand testifying against you.
Right against you, right away, you know? So what we're going to do now, Ms. Gang, is I'm going to introduce my wife, Lucinda, is here, you know. And, you know, I'm going to turn the mic over to her and let her ask a few questions, you know, and let her know what's happening.
Yeah, Ms. Gang was sentenced to 20 years in prison. It's six.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I just came to the show late, so I didn't get to hear anything, but welcome to the show, and thank you for calling in tonight to share your story with everybody.
Thank you. You can know more about me if you go to dorothygaines.org or my Facebook page, Dorothy Marie Gaines. But my story is a tragic story, and there are many more Dorothy Gaines out there. Yeah, minimal. You take the case of Clarence Aaron that's serving three life sentences. His own first cousin and his childhood friend testified against him in trial to get to save their own self. And all he did was in the midst of a drug transaction. He never sold the drugs. He never took the drugs anywhere. And he's serving three life sentences. So you probably heard about his case where now the part attorney office held back some paperwork that the president wanted at that time, which was President Bush, to get him in clemency, and they didn't do it. So that's made a big headline news around the world as well. And he's from Mobile, Alabama. And he's also on the snitch documentary that was put out in 1999 through PBS Frontline. And I advise everybody to watch PBS Frontline Snitch because you will really find out how the justice system works.
Wow. You know, you need to put those links out for us so we can look all that up. But we definitely, you know, we post a lot of stuff about the industrial prison complex, and we know for sure that there are a lot of people in there that shouldn't be in there, and that, you know, a lot of people are growing old in there. And what are they going to do with all these people that, you know, they're not giving health care to, and that, you know, that they're not really going to be taken care of here? You know, most of the people that are in prison are from the baby boom era, and, you know, it's just getting worse and worse. And as it turns to private prisonization, or privatization, you know, it's just getting worse.
But to me, the way I look at it, and your husband asked me one thing, what do I tell young people? When I go into the school, I tell them one thing. Education is even important in prison, because if you do not have a high school diploma or a GED or a college degree, you can only make $547 a month. But if you have those three credentials, or one of those three credentials, your starting pay grade will be 12 cents an hour. So even in prison, you have to have an education to make 12 cents an hour.
Exactly.
And to me, it's just another form of legalized slavery, because the jobs in there that you do, someone on the street can be doing them for at least $15, $16 to $30 an hour, where you're only making 12 cents an hour or $5.47 a month inside the prison. And you're going to work 40 hours a week.
Right. It's just, you know, they're using people to work in there, and they're not paying them anything. So there's big companies making a lot of money off of the work that these men and women do in prison.
What they need to do is go to the Unicor website. There's a website called Unicor for Federal Prison, and you can find out what Unicor makes, how much they are paid. And even when you make that small amount of money, we know that the government is not going to pay us a large amount of money in prison, and they can stay, house us and feed us and give us medical all together. But the thing about it, who's getting these millions of dollars they're making by the week from the production that's being put out in prison? And even with the little money that you're making, you're still made to pay child support out of that money and restitution fees.
You know, and how are they supposed to do that? You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well,
they end up with nothing.
You have to do that out that small amount of money that you make. You have to take that money and turn around and pay your restitution. And if you're ordered child support, I've seen men and women that had to pay child support from all that money while they was incarcerated in prison.
Yeah, and that's why there's still a lot of drugs and different things going on inside prison. People are trying to make their money.
Exactly. And that's why it's probably more drugs or crime inside of prison than on the outside, because you don't have families out here. For example, you give a person 30 or 40 years to life in prison, they leave that child with their grandmother, your mother, and that mother dies off. The child goes to a foster home. The child themselves are bitter, and they grow up with, they just have so much bitterness because their parent has been gone. For example, I was incarcerated with a young lady that had done 22 years, and she was 6 months from coming home. And her son got killed, her only child got killed, and they would not let her come to the funeral. And she would come home in 6 months after serving all those years in prison. You know, her mother had died,
yeah,
and then the child just You know, who do you have to lean on? Because you've locked up everybody. You locked up the husband. You locked up the wife. You locked up most of all the family. So the children has nobody. So what happens is the children does more time than the person that you incarcerate because they are mentally incarcerated.
Exactly. There's a lot of people doing time on the outside because their loved ones are gone. And
exactly.
A lot of children are affected and grow up without, you know, one or both of the parents. And then a lot of them end up in more trouble because they don't have
that
support.
That's what happened with my son. Yeah, my son was the same way. My mother died 6 months after I got to prison. And my son was so evil and bitter about me leaving him because I was an only parent. That my son, I just got him back 3 months ago. He was just released from the incarceration himself. But, you know, it's a thing that goes on down the line. And I don't know when they're going to draw the line on this and realize what they are doing to families.
Exactly. It hurts a lot of people.
Yes. And even when you put us back out here, there's still a lot of stumbling blocks in our way. Right now, I mean, I'm having the worst financial problem. I've been just mentally going through a lot. Because even when you put us back out here, there's a lot of things that's locked away from us. Because of a drug conviction, you can't get food stamps, you can't get housing, you can't get a grant to go to school. But if I had murdered or killed someone, I would be able to get all that. So, you know, you still put a person back out here in society, and that's where recidivism comes in, because there's no job, there's nothing to go on while you're out here. You are just struggling from day to day and trying to keep from going back inside. But there are not going to be a lot of strong people like I've been. They're going to do something and go back inside because that's all they know.
Exactly. Yeah. There definitely needs to be a lot more reentry programs. The laws need to be changed to where people can hire ex-offenders, ex-felons if they want to. And, you know, people need to be given that second chance. You know, if you go do your time, a lot of people are in there for, you know, like you said, non-violent offenses. A lot of them are non-violent drug offenses. You know, some of them are their first time, some of them maybe not. But still, there's people in there that can, you know, learn and change and need that opportunity. And first of all, they don't need to be in there for 20 years for selling drugs. And people are committing murder and getting out in less time than drug dealers. So it's ridiculous.
Exactly. And what really hurts me so bad, there's never no drugs to be seen in trial. It's ghost drugs. It's hearsay. If I was a kingpin in the case, in order to save myself, I would say you. I knew of you selling 10 keys if it's going to save me from doing a life sentence. So there's no truth in these people that come to sit on the stand. That's what bothers me the most. If there was some truth to their testimony, I could accept it. But they just make up all these numbers, these fictitious amounts of drugs, and you are selling on these amounts of drugs, and they go home. So how are you stopping the drugs? The drugs started coming because you're putting people in prison. They don't even know anything about the crime.
Right. You know, and as we know in the beginning anyways, most of the drugs that came into the inner cities are because of the CIA and the government. You know, they were trading the drugs for the arms with Nicaragua. So, you know, we know that the government uses people out here and turns on people and then gets other people to turn on other people, and it's just a vicious cycle.
Right. It's a domino game. That's what I call a domino game.
Yeah. You know, the government will use you to do their dirty work, and then they'll go against you and put you in prison and then still want you to snitch on everybody.
That's right. And your life, your family life is in jeopardy, and you've done all this. And a lot of times I've ran into so many women that wait on a Rule 35 where they were snitching somebody, and the government tell them, oh, well, the information you gave me, we already had it. And here you are taking a chance. Y'all understand and testify. You're not going to get a day off your sentence. You got to come out and face the people that you testified against. And you didn't get any time off your sentence.
Exactly. There's a lot of things backwards out here in this world, things that just don't make sense. You know, things that shouldn't happen. And they get away with it. And, it, you know, the little things that we do out here as citizens, you know, we get in big trouble for. So the laws are definitely twisted, and people need to wake up and realize what their laws are in their communities and what they can do. You know, just a voice sometimes can change things, because there's so many people that are uneducated about the laws and about what really goes on behind those gates and, you know, the different things that are happening. You know, people just need to really understand and learn what's going on.
Right, and that's what I've tried to do for the last 12 years, is to educate people. But then I realized in the last 2 years, I've been out here trying to educate people, and I'm still falling down the drain with nothing. Where there are people that's educating, that's doing motivation speakers, getting paid big bucks, big money, and living good. And I said, here I am trying to fight for the people. I don't regret fighting for the people that I left behind. I don't regret trying to help change the law, because there are so many people that's in prison that shouldn't be there. But then in the meantime, I found myself suffering and went into a depression, ended up on a ventilator for a whole week, almost dead, because stress and depression of my finances. You know, my finances is just, you know, and I just can't believe that I've been out this long and I'm still suffering like this. That's what bothers me the most.
Definitely. It's definitely hard for people. You know, and like you said, you've been out, you said, for 12 years?
Yeah, almost 12 years, and, you know, and I'm still suffering financially. I see I got so many issues and medical issues and things going on, and I just can't believe it's this way. But I've used my time, and I don't regret it, trying to educate people, going out doing all this, I could say community service, trying to help young people not go to jail, trying to educate women, because I just wanted something I promised that I would do, because I was uneducated. I didn't know anything about conspiracy. I didn't know that you could be involved with somebody, and they feel like because you involved that person, you should know what they are doing, and you get more time than the kingpin. I didn't know any of this. So my thing was, I wanted to make sure people read books. I came out in Essence magazine. I was in Jet. I was in People. I was in the last edition of George, my son. I was in that group before he got killed, JF Kennedy. I have been on many different talk shows, Marty Povich and all, trying to make things different. And I'm now I'm the fallen person right now that's falling down. I have fell down to the bottom. And, you know, it really hurts me to not even have a green dollar in your pocket, you know. That really hurts me. But I don't regret what I've done.
Right. Well, you know, education is very important in that, you know, I'm sure that you've touched a lot of people along the way, so just don't give up, you know. You can't give up. You've come too far and too hard, and, you know, a lot of people give up right before they're going to succeed at something because they get so tired and frustrated, you know, but it's just that little extra push that makes winners over losers, so just don't give up.
You know, I promise I'll never give up, but I also know I just can't keep going on when I have nothing to even go on with, you know. You know, I can't believe no transportation. I mean, just can't do anything. If you want to go to a school and speak to a lot of times when I see a lot of robberies going on, I just want to go to the school and just tell these kids, this is not the way to go. And you look out and say, how can I get there? I mean, it's just so much that has really happened in my life over these last years. Where I lost my mother and my son being incarcerated. I just got into a depressed stage of trying to help somebody else and lose my own family. You know, so it's just a lot that goes on with me mentally, but I would never give up, never.
Right. Well, we hope that you know, join us on our website and continue to post information there, because we are a big advocate for a lot of different things. And definitely, you know, we're about educating the youth as well as adults about the things that are going on out here. So, you know, just stick with us, and we'll help you spread that message as much as we can. I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic back over to Rob for a minute.
Yes, I'm back, Ms. Gaines. So, yeah, definitely, you know, everybody definitely need to definitely hear your message, because, like you said, it's a lot of people that's got out of incarceration. And just for the gentleman that's on the line, too, everybody gets out of incarceration and then they don't have nothing for you out here in the public, you know, but go sit down and have a seat, and your life is over with when you got a felony. You can't get nothing from us, you know, and that's how they look at us. Are you there?
Oh, sure, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, then.
We don't know who you were referring to.
Oh, I was referring to both of y'all on that one right there. When I say
they
don't have nothing to nobody.
Yes, because, you know, having a felony on your record, that's a very, very damper on any possible job opportunities because before all this happened, I had a top secret clearance. Now I don't have I can never get a top secret clearance again, and I won't be able to work in my field that I was trained in as far as dealing with intelligence within the government. So basically, when you get a felony on your record, you're very limited on what you can apply for and as far as supporting yourself.
Right. Yeah, you know how that goes, you know, and we both know that you can't wait for the government to give you nothing. You really have to get out here and truly get it yourself, because waiting on them, it definitely ain't going to happen.
Exactly. And also, you know, when you're talking about the statistics about this mass incarceration, you know, you're talking about 1 out of 99 adults are incarcerated today, and then you have 1 out of 32 are either had one time dealt with the judicial system, or on either probation or parole, and basically as far as society has to be concerned, you're talking about that many people with a federal with a criminal record now. Need to be given opportunities to be able to either they were falsely convicted or convicted. You basically have to give them the opportunity to be able to support themselves. And the way society is, they don't give you that opportunity. They basically write you off as a loser and just deep-six your application.
Right, right. And, you know, that's exactly, you know, me and my wife, we tell people, you know, it's like everybody out on Facebook and these different places, and we tell people, you know, you don't even have to be a convicted felon, but anybody, you know. You need to learn how to get your PayPal account, learn how to sell something on there, because you don't have to be no felon or non-felon to get a PayPal account and sell your own thing online, you know. And the government can't stop you from selling what you need to sell online. So we definitely preach and motivate people to just start your own thing, you know what I mean? Because the government ain't going to give you nothing. I mean, it's a done deal with them. So you have to just really tap into what your niche is. And if it ain't never selling hats, socks, shoes, anything, because that's a global hustle, you know, it's a round the world hustle. It ain't just in Mobile or New York or Cincinnati, it's a global hustle. And I think we need to really all start concentrating more on that. And that's where we can all come up, you know what I'm saying? And that's just advice that I would like to just put out there to everybody, you know?
Yes. You know, the thing I found, I was a tutor while I was in prison. And what I found was that that you're talking about as far as education is concerned and getting your own. What I found was that, and I've tutored guys that were very low. We're talking about fourth and fifth grade levels. And them having even a reputable skill to do anything, you know, you basically have to, like you said, to even get into a training program when coming back out. You have to have at least a GED. So basically, we're just talking about a person. You still have to, you know, we're talking about these guys don't have any training on anything. All they basically knew how to do was stand on the corner and sell drugs. And and then even to be able to train, in order for them to be trained in something so they can go on and take that training and open up their business is also a task, a challenge.
Right. So, yeah, you know, that's just something that we must continue to educate everybody. And like you said, you know, you got to have some kind of education in order to do something out here. You can't just be a person that don't know nothing, because if you don't know nothing, you get nowhere.
Yes. And just basically, and then that's why you see the recidivism. That's why you see people, what they're called, snitch, because that's what happened also in my case. The woman that ended up testifying against me, come to find out, she had a racket longer than my arm. So basically, I'm sure that was the deal that they made with them. But see, in my trial, they turned around and would not identify her as a confidential informant. They just said that she was a tipster. What is the difference? I don't know, but I know she was, and from what my evidence that I have and I possess, that she was a confidential informant. And so what happens is that these people get their backs against the wall, they limit it anyway, and then they just tell them, well, okay, if you help us, you can sit up here and get 3 years instead of 10 years, and that's what happens.
Exactly. You know, the prison should be a place of reform, you know, and we all know that it's not always that way. There are some people that go in, and I guess maybe it depends on what you're there for, what prison you're in. I'm not sure about how education is in prison. I know that some people can go in and have, you know, gotten doctorate degrees in prison. Some people get a GED. Some people don't do anything, but they still want to gang bang and sell drugs. So I know that there's a big variety of things. You know, some people can work, some people can't, but it should be a place of reform. It should be a place where everybody that's in prison, mandatory, they go to school, they go to classes, they go to work, they do their time. The problem comes in, I guess, where the ones that are in prison, and, you know, they shouldn't be. They're in there for silly reasons or reasons that are not true. You know, we know there's a lot of people in there that shouldn't be. There are a lot of people in there that should definitely be in there. But the, you know, what we do need is reform. We do need, you know, places of where people can come out, you know, reentry programs where they can come out if they haven't learned a skill in there, where they can come out and, you know, in 3 or 4 months learn a skill, get put out on a job placement somewhere. And, you know, it's just really sad that the way things are.
Well, the reason
What experience do you have as far as, you know, what you've been through? What kind of educational things were in prison?
Well, they had a GED program in which I was a tutor at the prison. I tutored there for over 4 years of helping guys to get their GEDs. And basically, there was this, and then, well, the thing, well, I didn't really think that that program was all that great. It was that, see, they received money. See, these prisons, and we're just talking about into the prison industrial complex, is that they make money off of people. They get between $40,000 to $59,000 a prisoner across jails and prisons across the United States on each person. Then you break that down into now this is a job force where they can tap into, where they can sit up there and underbid for from telemarketing to road work, where they only have to pay these guys 12 cents an hour, in which this turns into this hurts the regular community because people would and these companies would say, well, if I can hire these prisoners and pay a lower amount as far as the contract to get this done, then I don't have to hire any of the regular people that I have to worry about paying minimum wage to, and then them striking and asking for more benefits and all these other things, and health benefits and things like that. So it's really conducive for the government to sit up there to incarcerate as many people as they possibly can, because this is not about punishment and rehabilitation. It's about destruction and exploitation. They're just trying to profit, and it just, like you said, as I think somebody said before, Ms. Gaines said before, it's this legalized slavery.
Right, and all the private prisons are, the only reason they're in it is for the money. You know, just for instance, let's talk about a phone call. You know, you have to go through hoops when you're in prison to make a phone call. You know, it costs, I don't know how many dollars per minute, you know, your phone cards, and you have to go through certain phone companies. You know, and there's a lot of big, well-known businesses making money in the private prisons.
Well, the thing about it is they have this thing, they have Unicor, then that's where the governments are sitting up there, are trying to turn that over. Basically, what you're seeing on Wall Street with the control, with the company, with the country being ran by corporations, this is what's happening within the prison. Eventually, what they're trying to do is make everything privatized, and then a corporation, that's just another corporation that's running the country.
Right, right. And to you and Ms. Gaines, we got a caller right here that we're going to take for both y'all. Hold on 1 second. Caller, last 4 digits, 7898, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi.
Yes, hello.
This is Boss Ratliff. How are you?
Everybody's
good.
We appreciate you calling in.
Yes, well, thank you for inviting me on your show. And my staff, they're doing a wonderful job. Sorry I wasn't able to make it when you first came on air. I was, like, driving like a mad person down the freeway trying to get to this show.
we appreciate that.
Yes.
All right. So we just want to ask you, tell the viewers a little bit about you and how did you get involved with the Wesley Snipes movement as well?
Okay. Actually, I happened to be on Facebook one day, and I was scrolling down my news feed, and I saw a petition come down, and this petition was for Wesley Snipes. It was by another activist. Her name is Victoria Thong. And she asked me to sign the petition, so I said, well, I normally don't sign anything until I research. So I went and did a brief research on Wesley Snipes' incarceration, and I've been on board ever since. Once I began to research, there are two videos that I would highly recommend your listeners to see. One is Larry King Show. Actually, that comes in two parts, so that's the two videos that I'm referring to. Larry King with Wesley Snipes. Wesley, in his own words, explained his wrongful conviction. And it just touched my heart when I saw that. And I says, this man really got a raw deal. I absolutely could not believe it. Wesley Snipes is actually the first African-American male in history to actually beat the IRS, yet still go to prison. He was sent to prison for 3 years for a misdemeanor. Misdemeanor charge, which normally would only require probation or, worst-case scenario, it would be house arrest, if any. But the charges that he was convicted of, he was he had beat the government for tax evasion, all of the tough charges. So they ended up getting him on failure to file a tax form. And that's pretty much why I'm here, because many people, I want to set the record straight, there is a huge difference between failure to file a tax form and tax evasion. And the difference would be probably about a 5 to 10 year conviction to probation. So this is why Wesley is locked up. Actually, it goes even deeper than that. When we talk about his trial, he had a trial with 12 jurors that were not his peers, and that in itself is totally against his rights, his constitutional right to a fair trial. He had an all-white jury, and 3 jurors out of the 12 actually wrote a letter to the judge telling the judge that there were another 3 jurors that convicted Wesley before the trial even began. So there, we have another violation here. Also,
amen.
Wesley Snipes is from New York, and they expedited his case to Florida, Ocala, Florida, one of the most racist places in Florida. Actually, it's not far from Sanford, Florida, where Trayvon Martin's case was. And I began to work on a movement after that. I began to do a lot of posting off my profile wall, and it became so huge. I started getting a lot of inboxes from different people telling me their stories, and I said, well, you know, we need to get this story out. So this is how the Wesley Snipes movement arrived. This is how we were born. And from there,
okay.
I met Kenneth, and I met Dorothy, and I have so many other members of my group that we're like a family.
Sounds great. And, you know, we just want to iterate that, you know, Mr. Snipes, we send him our Streets Don't Love You Back newsletter every month, you know, and we've been sending him the newsletter for the last, since he's been incarcerated, you know, and we haven't heard back from him, but we still send that newsletter out every month to him, and now, you know, you all being on our radio show, which my wife always put all the guests on our radio show and our newsletter every month as well. So when Mr. Snipes get this newsletter that'll be coming out with y'all information in it, he'll know that, you know, he got the Wesley Snipes movement and who's running it in the whole nine yards.
That's
so
nice.
He's definitely going to eventually write it back sooner or later. But we have been definitely sending it to him ever since he's been incarcerated.
Well, you know what else that I learned from about the Wesley Snipes case that was very interesting is Wesley Snipes actually had an accountant. His name was Kenneth Starr, and I'm not referring to
him. Oh, man, he's a bad accountant. I heard about him a long time ago. He beat a lot of people out of
millions. I'm not referring to Kenneth Starr with the Bill Clinton. This is an accountant from to the stars. And Kenneth Starr, along with his attorney, which his name is Bristol. What is the first name? Jonathan Bristol. Both of them, they created a Ponzi scheme on over 300 celebrities, including Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes found out about this Ponzi scheme, and he began to go and tell other celebrities. And he took Kenneth Starr to court. He sued Kenneth Starr behind this. And out of him doing that, the IRS turns around and begin to harass Wesley. I was listening to Dorothy and I was listening to Kenneth, and I've heard their stories, and I couldn't agree with them more. We have to do something about mass incarceration and wrongful conviction. We currently have like 2.3 million African American males incarcerated. There was a new study that just came out, 50% of the 2.3 million are wrongful convictions.
Amen for that, you know. And what we wanted to say, we thank God for people like you and people like your crew, you know, and that's giving back and educating and doing things to that nature, you know. And I'm going to pass the mic to the missus and let her ask you a few questions. But we appreciate all three of y'all on here tonight. And appreciate y'all sending the message as well.
Because it goes a little bit further than just coming on a talk show and telling our stories. I mean, what our major plan to do is to take this problem. First of all, we have to get this message out to the people and make them aware that this is definitely a message that needs to be addressed to President Obama and Eric Holder, General Attorney Eric Holder. Both of them have tap danced around these issues for years. Neither one of them want to talk about mass incarceration or wrongful conviction or any type of judicial reform. And this needs to be an electoral, debatable issue. And this is why we're here. Secondly, we would like to get some type of new judicial reform where we can actually change the question on the job application and for jobs and housing, you know, that convict question. That needs to go. I know here in Seattle, we actually don't have the convict question on job applications. They do have it for housing, but there still needs to be some type of reform to make it a little better, because although they don't have it on the job application, they will still ask that question during an interview. So we have some work to do.
There's a lot of work to do.
Definitely.
Definitely.
When I apply for food stamps, what is a drug person can't eat, but a murderer or rapist can?
Mm-hmm.
Because they specify if you are convicted of drugs.
Yeah. Lucinda, I'm not sure. Have you read The New Jim Crow, written by Michelle Alexandria? She speaks on these issues about health coverage, food stamps. I mean, it's horrible. There are people who have been incarcerated that may have HIV or any type of illness that's fatal, and they would not be entitled to health coverage, food stamps, housing, jobs. They can't vote, and they're discriminated for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
Well, what I'm saying now is they're discriminating the felonies. I mean, it's not even about discriminating, period. They're discriminating what felony can have this and what felony can't have this. Well, it should be, if you're not going to let a drug felon have housing or food stamps, you shouldn't let no felon have it.
Well, actually, I think that, you know, it should not be a discriminatory issue, period.
Exactly.
Everyone should be entitled. I mean, when you take away someone's basic need to survive, that's worse than slavery. I mean, that's pretty much like genocide, because we have to eat. We need housing. These are musts. They're essentials that we need in order to survive. So once your basic needs are taken away for you to survive, it's pretty much like putting a gun to your head. What are you going to do? And this is
exactly
the reason why many people end up right back in the penal system, because they can't survive out here. And we need to change these laws. We need more programs to educate. We need more services to create jobs. We have some brilliant people that are incarcerated.
Right.
And they should be learning these skills while they're incarcerated so that they can prepare
You know, even if you're in there 20 years, if you're going to, if you're lucky enough to come home, you need to have the skills that you need to survive out here, because like you said, if they don't have them, they're going to revert to what they know, and that's stealing, killing, robbing, you know, just to eat. And well, that's that they want to do it, it's a survival mechanism.
There are two things that's against that, with that. At first, when I was incarcerated in Florida, they had colleges that came in and gave you classes, but the outside people were complaining about people that was incarcerated getting more education than the people that was out here being paid, so they cut out a lot of those things. So what are people going to do for 20 years, sit up and play dominoes, run the unicorn, watch soap operas? I mean, what are you doing in there for a lifetime? I mean, people need these people to come in from the outside and teach you skills. Then another thing, once you get these skills that they once taught you before they cut them out, and you're not allowing people to come out when they do get out and get free to use the skills, because you don't allow them to get the job to use the skills, then that should be a problem, because then you waste money by educating the person then.
And then you have people who are highly educated, such as Kenneth Ford, and he's still caught up in this vicious cycle. So it's a no-win situation either way you look at it, and I believe it's time for our president to begin to address this situation. This is a problem that we have in our community. If you did a survey on African Americans, I can guarantee you at least every African-American knows one or two or maybe even more people that are incarcerated. That's how many people we have. Michelle Alexandria, she made a quote. She says, we have more people incarcerated right now than the 1850 slave trade.
Yes, and our country has more people incarcerated than any other country in the world.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was reading an article, and they said if you were to put Iran and Iraq together, we have more people incarcerated than Iran and Iraq put together.
Exactly. It's another country, you know. So, and being incarcerated, I've never been incarcerated myself, but I have read a lot about it and know people that have. And
mm-hmm.
what people out here really don't realize is that being incarcerated is like you're living a whole, you're in another world. It's in a world of itself. It's very different. It's very, I mean, it's you know, survival, and it's a hard life.
You have to learn to survive. 50% are wrongful convictions. You have 50% of people sitting in jail that's innocent. And then we have a system that is so corrupt to the core. We have judges that get paid money just to fill these prisons up with how many people they can get. And anytime that you have someone who doesn't have the financial means to provide for a lawyer or any type of legal fees, they're the ones that get screwed the most.
That's true. That is
and
true.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that pay the lawyers get screwed, too.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
pay the lawyers
that's what happened to me.
They get screwed, too.
Oh, I know. Wesley Snipes, I mean, he won his case. So this is the reason what made me jump. I've never heard of anything in all my days of someone winning to be acquitted from their case and then still end up going to jail 3 years for a misdemeanor, 3 years. I can't believe this. I honestly cannot believe
right.
this.
It's crazy.
See, that's
you
another
know,
trick.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to add, see, in the federal system, another trick that prosecutors do is what they call relevant conduct, where they use higher statutes and charges, and if they're acquitted of those charges, you still have the lower, and then they found guilty on the lower charge, what they do is use relevant conduct on what those higher charges would have held, and they tacked it on to up the time on the lower charge. And sure. And where the person ends up doing more time.
Right. And that I'm glad Kenneth brought that up because, see, right now, today, if Kenneth or myself committed another crime, in federal, they would take we'll be what you call, they would use our crime that we've already done time on, and we'll be mm-hmm. doing time again because they use the points from what we've already done time and make, if we committed another crime, they would take that and use it again against us. And that's just insane. And yes. I've already said it, Cam.
Lifetime,
and
I think they call it like lifetime
law,
criminal
you
something.
Can't serve the same, you can't serve time for the same crime, but, you know, it really means absolutely nothing as far as these laws go. They play the rules the way they want to.
Right. In the federal system, like Kenneth just said, they have points. So if I committed another crime, they would use the point from the crime I committed in 1995, they say, and use that against me again and make my points go up higher for the new crime.
Yes.
They use my old conviction and make my points go up higher for the new crime. That's the way the federal system works.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've done anything prior, that makes your points go up higher and give you more time in the federal system.
Well, I know it's time to take this subject and take it before the UN, because this is definitely a human rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And this is the message that we would like to convey, because this is pretty much where we're at. We've tried, I've signed so many petitions to Eric Holder, to President Obama himself, and you hear nothing. I think the biggest insult, we were just talking about this on my Facebook page, the Free Wesley Snipes Movement, just last night. I'm not sure if many people are aware that the Obama administration denied Marcus Garvey's pardon. They to pardon his name. A civil rights leader who the government had already admitted that they had did wrong. They denied his pardon, and what they wrote was an insult. They said his pardon was a waste of time and resources. I thought that was just horrible. That, what a disrespect. What? So, you know, you have people like Marcus Garvey, you have people like Mumia. You have so many people in there that they know are innocent. Troy Davis, another example. I haven't heard one word from the Obama administration yet to speak on the genocide of Troy Davis. Not one word.
Nothing.
The Trayvon Martin case. What did he say? Trayvon Martin could have been my son. What is that?
Right.
What is
exactly
that? So this is an issue that the human rights issue, the government will not, they will not even look into this case. They won't address these issues at all, and it's time to take this before the UN as a human rights issue. If gay and lesbians can take their cause and turn it into a human rights issue, damn it, we can do the same thing with mass incarceration and wrongful conviction. The thing is, we need more people on board. We need more people, more African Americans on board, aware. You know, we need to spread this awareness out. Because,
you know,
this
Rosalind,
needs to
too,
be a political topic.
The thing that scares me, too, and I put a few blogs on our website about it. I don't have the information in front of me, but, you know, the CCA prisons and the other private prisons are trying to get contracts from the federal government from federal prisons to take over with 20-year contracts right now, keeping the beds 90% full. So what does that mean for people out here in the community when, you know, we might get arrested, like you say, on a misdemeanor or something small, and because they need to fill those beds because of their contract, they're going to put us in prison so that they make their money.
Of course, this is the biggest industry, period. I mean, most people don't know that the prison industry is on Wall Street. They're selling shares. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
So we're in the wrong business.
Oh.
Funny but not funny, right?
Funny but
you know,
not
if we
funny.
Were in the prison business, though, maybe we could educate
because,
people.
You know, prison is only just the first step, but you live a life of hell and misery once you're released from prison because
that's
you're still discriminated against these same horrible rules that need to be changed. And like I said, that's like a genocide in itself. When you take someone's basic right to live, when you take that away from them, what do they have? Where are the people that should be speaking for them? I have never been in jail in my life, thank God. But I have so much compassion because I have two teenage sons, and every day is like playing a game of Russian roulette with them. Not because they're bad, but because I know that in any given moment they can be stopped by the police or they can be shot. We have to stand your ground law out here in Seattle, Washington. So my kids can be walking around the street and get shot and some fool get off.
Wow.
So there's judicial justice. And that Obama has been ignoring, that he needs to come on board and he needs to really start addressing these issues.
And it's what Robin was saying earlier about prison. I mean, I never thought a dream a day that I would walk inside of a prison. And right now I live the dream, the prison after the prison. I'm just free. I'm just walking around in air, but you don't know how I'm in prison for real, financially, my living condition. It's prison. But I'm free. But it's prison after the prison. That's what I call it. But I'm grateful every day of my freedom. But I have to just suffer what I'm going through.
I call it the gift that keeps on giving.
Right, and I can adjust to all of that, you know. You know, I got three brothers that are doing life in prison, you know. So, we live in that same prison every day. Even though they're behind the walls, you know, the family lives in prison out here.
It's just like I said earlier, it's just about every African-American person that I know. If you talk to them, you'll find out that they have someone that they know that has been incarcerated. Yet this still seems to be a subject where African-Americans will not, they don't want to discuss. And we need to discuss this. Okay. This is a ugly problem that just needs to come out. And it needs to be addressed.
Right. And it's like toward the right way, you know, because we're educating. And like I said, Ms. Rosin, we're going to put this information in our newsletter. And our newsletter goes to 50 different prisons across the country every month, federal and state. And, you know, we educate guys and women. And it goes to women and men prison. We have a lot of people on our team inside the walls that educate these young kids that got out dates, you know, because, like I said, I got three brothers doing life in prison. They don't got no out dates, you know. And so I want to say to prison, I feel that all day because my one brother, he just turned 36. But he been in prison all his life, you know what I mean?
Oh.
And he be there until he go out there with cement boots on, you feel me? So what I tell kids when I go out and speak is that you have to be very, very careful, because the least mistake can cost you the rest of your life, not only
exactly.
in jail, but
mm-hmm.
it can take you into the graveyard, you know? And my three brothers never visualized, you know what I mean? They'd be in their 20s and spending the rest of their life in the penitentiary. Now they're in their 30s, and it's like, wow, you know, I couldn't even fathom that, you know what I mean? You know,
mm-hmm.
you hear brother the whole duration, you know, there's no, I'm going home August 18th. You know what I'm saying? This is all me until the bell rings.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad. I mean, it reminds me of Troy Davis.
As you said that, I'm not cutting you off, but as you said, it made me think when I speak to people, and you hear people say, well, I only have 1 year. But you can go in prison with 1 year, 2 weeks, and those 2 weeks can cost you a lifetime.
Or
right.
it can cost you a lifetime because
year,
you don't know what you got to encounter
and end
inside.
Up in here for 20.
Right. You can encounter something in the inside
mm-hmm.
while you're there will cost you
That's
your
it.
Whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen several times to people going with a 3 to 15 or flat 3. Next thing you know, you get in there and this fool done woke up on the wrong side of the bed or
That's
got
it.
A Dear John letter. The next thing you know, y'all in that bucking, and you got
That's
the defendant shut.
Right.
Next thing you know, you done sliced him up. Now you done called a motor case in there, so your three
That's
done came to life. So, yeah, it's like it's a jungle in there, and what makes that jungle inside the walls so bad is that, you know, out here, you can kind of walk away from certain things out here in the outside
exactly.
world, but in the inside of them walls, you can't walk away because you're with that individual every day, all day, so there's nowhere to
mm-hmm.
run or walk to.
That's
mm-hmm.
true. That is
so
true.
True.
You don't realize that is a true statement.
Kenneth,
yeah, it's real
life. Kenneth, what was the story that we were discussing the other day with the, I think it was a kid that got three double life sentences for just witnessing an act?
That's Clarence Aaron, isn't it?
Yes, Clarence Aaron.
Yes. That's
another prime example of what we're discussing. I mean,
that's what we talked about earlier before you came on. He was on Snitch with me. He's on that documentary, Snitch, that along with myself on that same documentary that was put out in 1999 by PBS Frontline. They put
mm-hmm.
out another part this year called The Fall Guy. And PBS Frontline put that out as well. But Clarence Aaron has a website, and I wish everybody would go to another website, a Facebook page, and sign his petition on change.org.
Oh, yeah, I've been tossing that out on our website. But we also have
person.
A documentary coming out as well. Dr. Randy Short, he was supposed to be here on this interview today, but he's in Atlanta right now working with Press Television from Iran, and they're doing a documentary on wrongful convictions and mass incarceration. So I'm really looking forward to when that airs. I haven't received the air date yet. They're doing interviews right now. But I will definitely keep you posted.
Hey, that sounds like a winner. And to all the guests that's on the show tonight, do you have, started from the first to number three, do you have any information you would like to leave with the viewers at this time?
Yes, I do. To all of your viewers who are interested in joining the Free Wesley Snipes movement, it's more than just Wesley Snipes. We reach out to anyone that needs help. We'll try to get your story out there. And you can contact us by going to Facebook search and type in Free Wesley Snipes Movement or visit our website, which is www.freewesleysnipesmovement.webs.com.
All right, sounds like a winner. All right, next guest.
Well, my name is Dorothy Gaines again. You can go to my website, dorothygaines.org. and read about me and email me. I'm sorry I have the wrong number, but my phone number is 334-268-2094. Or you can go to my Facebook page and reach me at Dorothy Marie Gaines. Thank you very much, and I'm here if you need me.
Oh, yes. Thanks
for having us. Sounds like a winner. Now we'll go to our third guest.
Yes, my name is Kenneth Ford, and you can look at my videos, my video that's on educationforpeace.com, and also you can view my mother's video, educationforpeace.com, where she is being interviewed by Dr. Randy Short, and I myself being interviewed by Dr. Randy Short on my conviction of the Espionage Act of 1917.
Actually, that's on our website too, Ken. So if they just come to our website, they can read your bio, and your videos are on the website as well. And we also have a bio of Dorothy's on our website as well.
Sounds great, and we would like Ms. Gaines and Kenneth to also, when you get time, log on to me and my wife's main page and join our movement there and put all your information up, your videos or what have you, and we'll get that spreaded out. And www.thestreetsdon'tloveyouback.ning.com. So when you get time, please log on, join the movement, and put all your information up, videos, what have you, blogs, and we'll start, keeping this thing vital all through the internet, and we'll definitely have this interview right here in our newsletter as well, so that newsletter will go out to all the prisons that we send it to, and that's 50 across the country.
Oh,
and if all of you, if you wouldn't mind, if all of you could send me your bios or information that you want me to add into the newsletter, please do that, and just email me at lucindaboydrn@gmail.com.
Okay.
And all of our information is on the website, but I definitely want to make sure, I get all the information that we talked about tonight and all the information mm-hmm. and stories about all of you in the newsletter, because we want to make sure that we do recognize all of you. And, we do appreciate all of you for coming on and sharing your stories, and we look forward to learning more about you as we continue networking. And just thank you all for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Good night.
Good night.
We're gonna go out tonight with just a couple minute, a little commercial with, it's about one of our businesses that we do. So if anyone's interested in learning a little more about starting their own business, let us know. We do have a couple of things going on the side. But we're gonna go out with that. And we just wanna remind everybody that we're here live every Wednesday night. And then our shows can be listened to 24/7 after that, anytime. Next Wednesday night, we're happy to say we've been on the air for 3 years already, and next Wednesday night is our anniversary for the radio show. So we're going to have some special guests, and we welcome anybody and everybody just to call in and give a shout out and say hi and just hang out with us for a little bit. So it'll be an exciting night, and we're hoping to have a lot of people just call in and let's just have a good time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Welcome. And thank you. And also, we want to let everybody know to log on, and we have our own online store as well, so you can get our clothesline, The Streets Will Love You Back clothesline, and you can get both of my books. The first book that we put out is The Streets Will Love You Back, and that book is about my life growing up in the city of Detroit, and I got caught up in the game myself, and the book tells you things from point A to point B to how I changed my life around. And also the second book is Never Hit a Woman, and me and my wife is advocates towards domestic violence towards women and kids, and we'd like for you to log on and get both of them books as well. So once again, we appreciate all our guests tonight. And we're asking everybody to have a blessed night and a blessed morning. If God bless you to wake up and hit the flow, always give him praise as soon as you hit it. And we are going out tonight, like the wife said, with a commercial. And God bless all the guests tonight and everyone across America.
An awesome product with an untapped market. A debt-free global company with operations all over the world. A compensation plan that is unmatched in the industry. Add it all up and you have the hottest opportunity on the planet today. An opportunity that is about to launch into massive global momentum. Never before has such market timing happened in this industry. Look, the internet is here. Billionaires have already been created. But it's not too late. Why? Because the future is not email and texting. It's about video. And MyVideoTalk is the company that is going to bring video to the masses. And you can be part of it. Our product is state-of-the-art, easy to use, and priced to sell. Instead of spending millions on TV and advertising, we decided to pay people like you. The product is awesome. The market is huge. The timing is now. Look, this is a global business. It is already proven. People around the globe are making millions. But the company just launched in the U.S., and the U.S. is the biggest market for these products. Are you kidding me? I mean, if you went to a street corner and asked 1,000 people if they know about MyVideoTalk, chances are maybe only one person would have even heard about it. That means you are in the perfect place right now to capitalize, to be first to market and first to profit. A business that you own with no employees, no inventory, and no headaches. Look, the demand is huge, the company is solid, and the money is absolutely awesome. Don't wait. Get started today.